Good news and bad news for Syria. At the United Nations today, Russia declared it would not agree to a draft resolution that condemns the Damascus government for the bloody crackdown on protesters. But the International Atomic Energy Agency referred Syria to the Security Council for building a secret power plant to manufacture plutonium. But President Bashar al-Assad may be more concerned with developments in the northwest corner of his country today, where thousands have fled the city of Jisr al-Shakur in anticipation of a government assault, and tanks are reported in the streets of the country's second largest city, Aleppo. Is the Syrian government losing control? Has it lost the legitimacy to govern? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Rami Khoury joins us now from his home in Beirut. He's director of the Issam Faraz Institute for Public Policy at the American University of Beirut. He's also a syndicated columnist at Lebanon's Daily Star. Nice to have you with us again.
Thank you, Neil.
And there's been speculation that Syrian forces have turned on each other.
Well, it's speculation. There are so many different stories coming out of Syria that are difficult to verify because there are no official international journalists there. There are some who go in as under the guise of tourists, and then there are some local stringers who report a little bit, but it's very, very difficult to confirm the information, and you're getting radically different stories coming out of the Syrian government and from the Syrian opposition. But the critical element, obviously, that everybody is watching is what happens to the armed forces. If there are any mutinies in the armed forces, or if there are tensions, if some people break away, if they start fighting each other, if some elements of the armed forces or the security refuse to carry out orders, stop backing the regime. Of course, in Tunisia and Egypt, that was the critical moment that led to the downfall of those leaders. So it's absolutely the critical issue to keep an eye on.
And the incident that everybody seems to be focused on occurred near Jisr al-Shakur. There were, the Syrian government says, 120 of its forces ambushed and killed by armed gangs. Thus far, the protests in Syria have been peaceful, determinedly peaceful, disciplined peaceful demonstrations. This is something very different.
It certainly is. It's a big story. The problem is nobody knows what is the truth of the story. The government is saying 120 of its troops were savagely killed, and it blames armed gangs. Many in the opposition are saying that, well, everybody in the opposition claims that they don't use arms, that it's a peaceful protest, and most people seem to believe that. But there is a history of armed violence in Syria against the regime by various groups, so you can't discount the fact that there are some people now using arms against the government. And there's also the possibility, as some people in the opposition say, that there are elements in the armed forces that have turned against other armed forces members, or even there are many stories that the army itself is killing its own soldiers if those soldiers refuse to shoot protesters. So, you know, take your choice. There's three or four different options. The fact is, though, there are real problems in Syria now for the regime and for Syrian civilians who are dying. You know, over 1,000 have died, and there's thousands who have fled the north near Jisr al-Shakur to go into Turkey. So this is a stressed-out country with real serious problems, and the problems seem to be increasing. They're not decreasing. There was reports of demonstrations now in the last few days in Damascus and Aleppo, which had not really happened before in a serious way. So this is a very difficult time for the government of Syria.
And in that statement where it reported the death of 120 of its own members of the armed forces in what it said was an attack by armed gangs, the Syrian government conceded that it had lost control of part of the country.
Well, that's true. And if you follow the pattern of what's happened in the last 3 months, it's areas on the borders of Syria. You had Deraa in the south near Jordan. You had a town on the Lebanese border. You have now just with Shahur in the north and the Turkish border. It's the periphery that is where most of the problems are, partly because these are, as in many of the Arab countries, the periphery is neglected. It's economically in much worse shape. Unemployment is high. Farming life is very difficult when there's a drought, as there has been for a few years now. So these are stressed-out areas and real deep trouble, and people are becoming desperate. And some of them take up political protests And there are reports now that in certain areas of the north, the Syrian government is losing control of some patches of the country. More troubling is that you have people all over the country in Syria, even in Damascus today. There was a report of 300 demonstrators in one of the sort of upscale parts of Damascus, people demonstrating publicly in support of the people of Yisr al-Shu'ur, as happened in the last 2-3 months, where people all over Syria were demonstrating in support of the people of Dirar in the south, which had been the first place that was really faced with a severe military crackdown by the government. And what's happening is the government is moving its elite brigades, troops, the 4th Division under Maher al-Assad, the brother of the president. It keeps moving these elite troops from one hotspot to another, and, you know, things quiet down a bit, and then when the troops move on to another hotspot, the former hotspot boils up again. So it's very difficult for the Syrians to simply use military force to quell these revolts, and there's concern about what may happen now in Yisr al-Shu'ur, that there may be a huge decisive crackdown that would kill, you know, huge amounts of people, as happened in Hama in 1982 when thousands were killed. So there's real tension in Syria today, and tomorrow is Friday. It's the weekly day of prayer, and that's when people congregate, and that's when historically in the last 3-4 months all over the Arab world you've had these huge public demonstration. So tomorrow is a day to keep your eye on what goes on in Syria.
You mentioned Hama in 1982. That was tens of thousands. Nobody's ever quite sure about the actual number, but tens of thousands of people may have been killed in that a massacre, I think, is the only safe way to say it. And that was conducted by the uncle and father of the current president. And there is, as you mentioned, considerable concern that we may be in for another. Well, Yisr al-Shu'ur may be seen as an example, made an example of.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, the extraordinary thing about Hama is that until today, nobody knows how many people died. The most common estimates are 10 to 15,000. Some people think it was 20,000. Entire quarters of the city were flattened, destroyed completely. This is something that, is seared into the memory of many people around the region. But the problem really is bigger than that, because, you know, if you look at Yemen, you look at Bahrain, you look at Libya, you look what the Mubarak and the Ben Ali regimes used to do in Tunisia and Egypt, this is a common problem all over the region, where governments are using weapons which mostly they bought from Western, you know, governments, the French, the Americans, the British, and the Russians in some cases. They're using these weapons against their own people, and it's getting to the point now where, you know, masses of people all over the Arab world simply won't put up with it anymore. And at the risk of dying, which they know is a big risk, they go out and they demonstrate.
Let's see if we get a caller in on the conversation. Our guest, Rami Khoury, director of the Essam Fares Institute for Public Policy at the American University of Beirut. And let's start with Keith. Keith with us from Lincoln in Kansas.
Yes. The way I look at it is what Bashar Assad's doing, he's letting his brother and his son run the Republican Guard in the fourth Division. The way I look at it is they're losing control. And what's going to happen is you're going to see the same thing in Libya. If we could get Gaddafi gone, and we have like Tunisia, Ivory Coast, Syria, and Israel, and, you know, the thing about Israel is, with this whole thing in perspective, is they cannot give up any of their land like in 48, 67, or 73. Every time they made a treaty, they got attacked. So
Keith, we're trying to talk about Syria, not Israel today.
Okay, well, here's the thing about Syria, too. I think that you're going to see culturally, politically, and religiously, these people in the Middle East are 1,000 years behind us. And I think by having these revolutions, and hopefully Syria is, Assad is taken out of there, I think you're going to see the same thing Herman Cain said. You're going to see 1,000 years futuristic like us, and I think it's going to advance technologically.
Keith, I'm not sure that Herman Cain has traveled to the region, and if you have traveled to the region, you realize 1,000 years, and that's just silly. I apologize for describing it that way, but it's just way out, completely out of whack. Rami Khoury, I apologize. But the question he does raise, though, is the question, is the Syrian government losing its legitimacy?
Well, its legitimacy is certainly being challenged. The Syrian government has assets that it can play, and one of them is that people don't many people don't want to see it collapse and see the country fall into turmoil or civil war, because the collapse of the Syrian government, especially in a violent way, would have major implications within the country, but also would spill over into so many other parts of the Middle East. So that's one huge asset that the government has. President Assad has been talking for years about reform, but didn't really do anything other than economic reform. No political reform was done. So he's pretty much lost his credibility. Most of the people who follow Syria and the region and many Syrians you talk to in the country and out say that, well, it's, you know, he just lost his chance. He should have done this 6 months ago, 5 years ago, 8 years ago, and he hasn't. And now that he's come out with this massive military response, it's really probably too late to get a political solution. It's a very difficult situation because the government is strong. It has a lot of supporters. There's 2 or 3 million people in Syria who are part of the armed forces and the Ba'ath Party and the government system, and many of the Alawites who are close to the ruling regime. And they're all going to fight to keep the government in power. So this is a Ceausescu Romanian type situation rather than a Jaruzelski and Lech Walesa Poland situation where you had a peaceful transition. I think Syria is facing a very difficult situation because the regime either stays in power and stays in control or it falls. It's very difficult now to see the regime doing a slow, peaceful transition.
Our guest is Rami Khoury. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we go next to Mohammed. Mohammed with us from St. Louis.
Hey, I just want to say that I'm a naturally born Syrian citizen, and I agree 100% that the Syrian government has lost its legitimacy to rule, and the military has lost its legitimacy from the first shot that was fired on the protesters. If we look back on the situation in Egypt, the military chose not to get involved. The military is to protect the people, whereas in the Syrian situation, the military is attempting to protect the regime and not standing by the people who they are sworn to protect.
And Rami Khoury, we tend to think in the West of militaries that are set up to fight and win wars, but Mohammed is in some senses correct. In some places in the world, and particularly in some places in the Middle East, militaries are set up to protect the regime from internal attempts to overthrow it.
Well, that's correct. Mohammed's right. And this is the reason why you've got literally tens of millions of people throughout the Arab world now challenging their regimes and demanding either serious reforms or overthrowing the regime, changing the regime, getting more legitimate, more accountable, more humane leaderships. And the Syrian situation is quite typical of the Arab world. I mean, they've done some terrible things recently, but it's a very similar situation to most of the Arab countries. And you're getting now these situations where, you know, you're getting these iconic figures, especially these two young boys, Hamza al-Khatib and Tamer Sahri, 13 and 15-year-old boys whose pictures of badly mutilated and tortured bodies have now appeared on the Internet and have been pretty well verified, I believe. And these have, in the last 2 weeks, these have sparked, you know, a new wave of demonstrations around the country. And once you get demonstrations all over the country in different places at once, and people still come out into the streets even after the army shoots them and 1,000 people have been killed, this is a pretty serious sign that the government has essentially, if not lost control, has certainly lost much of its legitimacy and will rule by military force. And this is not something that can go on for a long time. So I think there's still a very, very slim sliver of a chance to have a political solution if Assad makes that move. But the chances of him doing that now seem very slim.
Mohammed, thanks very much for the call. Finally, Rami Khoury, as you look around the region, probably Syria's most important economic partner in the past few years certainly has been its neighbor Turkey. Is Turkey now reconsidering its relationships with Damascus?
Yes, Turkey has opened its border in the north and clearly said so openly that it will allow any Syrian refugees who want to leave the Jisr al-Shughur area to go there. And about, I think, 3,000 or 4,000 have already moved there in the last few days. And it has publicly called on the Assad regime to find a political solution to the problems The Syrian, the Turkish Prime Minister Erdogan called the Syrian president 2-3 days ago. So the Turks are trying to use their influence, but it doesn't seem to work. They don't really have the capacity to get the Syrian government to try a different approach. And the Turks, like many people in the U.S. and in Europe, were caught off guard when these Arab revolts started all over the region. But now I think they're coming around to realizing that free and democratic citizens are the best guarantor for stability within every Arab country, within the region as a whole, and for relations between the Arab world and its non-Arab neighbors, including Israel and Turkey and Iran and the Western world. So I think Turkey is now much more clear that it is going to come down on the side of citizens who are fighting for their rights, but would like to achieve a political solution, not a military one.
Interesting. There are elections in Turkey, a country which had a rocky sometimes history with democracy, but of late rather more continuity with that. But in the last few seconds, Rami Khoury, a lot of people wonder about Iran's influence in this. Iran, of course, an important strategic ally of Syria.
Yes, Iran is a very important strategic ally, and the Iranian relationship with Syria has been very strong for the last 30 years and consistent. And the Iranians are caught off guard as well, because they don't like to see their strategic allies being challenged by the people in those countries. I think the Iranians also understand that they have pressures at home, maybe not the same magnitude as you're seeing in the Arab world, but clearly there are many Iranians. I was there last year, and you could just feel it in the air that there are many Iranians who are not happy with the political system as it is, and we had the demonstration. So the Iranians are really caught in a bit of a muddle, and they.
Rami Khoury, I apologize. Thank you very much for your time. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.